Okay, welcome to the second episode of the PositivePsychology.com podcast. Here I am again with Hugo Alberts, my friend and colleague, and we were having a conversation this morning about our business, our platform, the past 5.5 years that we've been working together. And, you know, like 15 minutes into the conversation, I was thinking like, oh, maybe it would be a good idea to actually start to record this so that we could share our story with you. And yeah, maybe there are some interesting insights along the way that are applicable to your life and your business as well. So welcome, Hugo. Welcome back to the podcast.
Yeah, Seb. Hi. Let's do this.
Okay. Where do you want to start?
Let's start at the very beginning. Maybe we should start where we first met. You know, I remember you came to university where I was working. The good old days, you know, you told me that you were into positive psychology. And what fascinated me back then is that, you know, I was teaching psychology to many students, of course, to many master students. And I always felt from the very beginning that although psychology wasn't your background, you didn't study psychology, you knew way much, you know, way more than most of my students. So for me, that very moment was a very, I would say, typical starting point that was present during the rest of our collaboration. You know, that very feeling of mutual interest, of love of learning and that kind of thing. I think this is what has connected us over the years. You know, when you're running a company together, I think you can be very different. But on a deeper level, I think it's really important to share the same values and have the same philosophy about life in general, but also about running a company. And I think this is also what makes it work. You know, I think this is why our company is still working, because I think on a deeper level, we share the same view and, you know, have a similar philosophy. At least this is my opinion, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I think we discovered the same kind of problem at the beginning that we both wanted to solve. And the problem was that, you know, this was like 9 years ago, right? And if you were to Google for positive psychology or any related terms, like all you would find was a couple of like boring university websites, you know, maybe the University of Pennsylvania, maybe a couple of other ones, but there wasn't a lot back then, you know, 9 years ago. But no like valuable resources for practitioners, no valuable resources for just, you know, laymen trying to learn more about positive psychology. So I remember, you know, having this problem myself as a student of positive psychology, you know, as someone very excited and wanting to learn more, like, hey, it's so hard to find any, you know, great resources on this. Of course, I was reading the books, I was reading Seligman, Peterson, you know, some other books that were, you know, the big books in the field back then. But that was it. So then I remember I spoke with you about this. We were speaking over the phone. I still remember where I was walking when we had this conversation. I was in the city center of Maastricht, you know, walking right across the Café Falstaff. And I think you were at the university or at home. And we said, like, we should build something. We should just, yep, you know, go out and build this platform that we're looking to find.
That was your idea, actually. You came with the idea of a website.
Yeah, and maybe that was the case because I was just getting into, you know, building a blog. Remember I had that blog about self-discipline?
Sure, I do.
That I was building. So I was just familiarizing myself with like search engine optimization. How do you build a website? How do you go about all of that? Which is why I think I got the idea of like, oh, we can also build a, you know, a website about positive psychology. And I also remember that you said, yeah, sometimes as a professor, yeah, I feel like I'm a monkey performing the same trick over and over again, because every year, getting the same students, like, yeah, what was it? Maybe you can explain some more about that.
Actually, the whole system that we've created at university is pretty much like a treadmill. So what you do is you develop a teaching program, and then you deliver this program year after year after year. And what I've noticed is that, you know, there is so much pressure and so little time that many you know, many professors, they don't have the time to to innovate, to develop their program. So you deliver virtually the same program every year. And in the beginning, that's fine. But after a while, it gets repetitive. And when you're talking, when you're giving a lecture, it becomes like a monkey game. You perform again the same trick over and over again. And I was in desperate need for some more, some dynamic action. So I think this is what I love so much about what we're doing at this moment. You can create something, you can record it, and then you move on, and then you can create something new and develop. Well, the old is not gone. When you deliver a lecture, it's beautiful, of course, but it vaporizes. The moment you speak those words, they're gone.
Yeah.
And I think the beauty of today's, technical possibilities is that we can record things, that we can publish them, and that a lot of people experience it and not still limited to just a handful of people that have enough money to pay, the money that is necessary for visiting colleges.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, remember back then you were still giving all of the mindfulness workshops yourself as well.
Yes. Yes.
And right now we have Mindfulness X, and people from all over the world, like literally all over the world, can follow this program and start to teach and implement mindfulness themselves. And it's like we're getting emails on a daily basis from people, leaving comments, of course, in the community on the site, that are profiting from this, even though you just recorded all of that once. That's like exactly the vision that we had for this.
Exactly. And I think this is a very cool way of approaching development. It's not about doing the same trick, but it's about moving with the technology that is offered, in modern times. I think we live in a very exciting time. And what I've noticed is that the bigger companies get, and like university or very big institutions, the more difficult it becomes to become dynamic, to become agile and to adapt to the changing circumstances. Now we're living in a society that is changing so rapidly.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So we were talking about this yesterday, and this is what I realized when we were talking about the current status of our company and so on. I said, I hope that we can stay together and do this with the two of us, and of course all the beautiful people that surround us, but that we can, stay connected as we are at this moment, that we can have these talks and have these informal meetings, and that we're not spending like 40 hours a week in meetings and managing other people. I think because then we become what I've never wanted to become in the first place. You see what I mean? Like this non-dynamic hierarchy thing that I'm so happy that I've left in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, then we become like prisoners of our self-built prison kind of, which was definitely not the idea behind all of this. It was more about creating the freedom to create what we want to, share with people, and to solve problems that, real people are really having in this world. Even if it's, practitioners experiencing the problem of like, hey, I want to give this presentation, but I don't have the resources for it. I don't have like these beautifully designed slides. It's like, okay, we've got that problem solved. You can take our materials and you can just, learn more about teaching this workshop, and all of the materials are there for you to do that. Like, it's not a problem of like someone not having food to eat. Of course, it's maybe not that high level problem, but it's a problem nonetheless. And the way you build a business, I think, is by looking for problems, preferably problems that you've experienced yourself, because what it's like. You can identify and empathize with that, and then you go out and solve them, not just for yourself, but you solve them for other people as well. And that is where the unique value is created. Like, you're helping society, if you will, or like people in a certain target market, in like marketing terms, to solve a certain problem. And in the end, if you do that well, value will be created and money will flow out of that. And that's why I think both of us, we always see like any finances that come out of it always as ensuing of, us solving a certain problem. It's not like, hey, let's go out and earn a bunch of money. It's like, no, let's solve problems. Let's try to do like our best, you know, possible work of solving this problem. And then there will be an end result. But that's not the direct goal.
No, absolutely. So if people tell me like, you know, I want to run my own company or want to start my own company, the first thing I ask them is like, why do you want this? You know, what is it? And when people say, you know, I want to be financially independent or all these kind of extrinsic reasons, I always tell them like, well, personally, I would think twice, because if you're not really loving what you're doing, it's going to be a tough journey. You know, I think over the years, we've experienced so many beautiful things, but also quite a few struggles, you know, and many of them are at a personal level. At least for me, you know, I had to deal with, you know, insecurity, you know, that constant feeling that it was not good enough that we were delivering, you know, although people are passionate and they give you positive feedback, deep down inside you, there is this pervasive idea that it's not enough. You know, is this something I learned from working with you, is that you said, you know, it's more than good enough, and you don't always please people by giving them more and more. You know, I always wanted to make sure that people got enough, you know, and so you over deliver. And I came to realize, and this is quite personal, of course, but I think for me, that was a way to at least make sure that I wasn't, you know, failing. You know, if you give so much that it's like obviously way too much, at least you can never say, you know, you failed, because you minimize that chance that it wasn't good enough. And at a deeper level, of course, it has to do with being okay yourself, you know, accepting yourself regardless of what. So there is this deep fear, I think, that was present and is still present with me, that it's not enough. And this is what I learned of running a company. You know, it's, you're in charge and you have to carry the burden of responsibility as well. So if you do this for the money only, it's a really tough journey. But if there is something underneath that, there is something deeper, you know, helping people, contributing to well-being, if there is something you strongly believe in that you're establishing through your work, I think that is so important, because that makes your daily work worth it for me, you know, and that makes the pain and the insecurity and the, you know, the critical feedback and everything that you receive that you have to swallow bearable, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. And this reminds me of the whole strength-based approach that's like foundational to our business and to the people we work with. It's like, we only want to work with people, including ourselves, that have responsibilities that come natural to them, that perform work that comes natural to them. Because what I'm doing, yeah, of course, there are some like tasks that are like the whole accounting and bookkeeping, you know. Okay, luckily we have a good accountant for that, but still sometimes I have to, you know, do a little bit of that. Okay, that's tedious. But other than that, like at least 80% of the stuff that I do comes so natural to me. Like I would want to do that anyway. Even better, I was already doing that before we, you know, registered as a business. I'd been doing that for 2 years without getting paid a dime, like literally nothing. But I was only like investing time and money in it because it came so natural to me. And what you're doing, like creating the products, working with people like to build out the toolkit, build these amazing information products and masterclasses, it's something that comes natural to you. But for other people, like Craig, for instance, running the customer support, like he is one of the kindest, most patient, most patient, lovable people that I know. So doing the customer support, even though it may not be his hobby, at least it's something that comes so natural to him. Because I don't want someone to just reply to emails and to help people along. No, I want to give this person to give, you know, the people, you know, our customers, our clients, the feeling that they matter, that there is someone there who really listens and who really cares about their success. Mm-hmm. So, and for all of the other roles, I think right now we've found people for most of the other roles that do something that comes natural to them. Yes. That they're not just, it's not just a strength, like it's more than a strength. It's like they would be doing this in one form or another, even if they weren't getting paid for this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's also this, the success behind, you know, companies that that work well, I think. It's all about the people. The company doesn't exist. This is something I realized, you know, when I was working at university. You know, a university is nothing more than the people that work there. It's, for many people outside university or outside a company, whatever, the brand is like a very abstract concept, right?
But like an entity in itself.
Yeah, it's like exactly like an entity in itself, but ultimately it's just the people working there. That those are the ones that make the company. And in the same way, I think when you look at your own company, I think the question is always like, do I work with the people that I would love to work with? And I remember that we once decided to create this document. You know, it has become our, you know, how do we call it? It's the
our constitution.
The constitution, yeah. It's the PPP, or you know, the pp.com constitution. It's basically everything we learned from our mistakes, from the things that went well. We put it in there. And I think one of the first things that is in there, we work with people that we love working with. And of course, they have to be capable of what they, you know, they have to be capable. They have to be trustworthy. They have to have all these other qualities. But in the first place, we have to, you know, feel connected and love working with them, because otherwise, we're wasting so much time, you know. In the end, life is about your day-to-day experience. That's what life is. You know, many people talk about life as if it's something bigger, like an abstract thing. But basically, life is this very moment.
Now,
it's me, you here sitting, you know, talking.
Exactly.
And if you don't like working with the people that surround you, it means that on a daily basis, your experience will be less than it could be, I think.
Yeah.
So this is why I think it's so important to choose wisely and choose people that you feel connected to, that you feel, you know, loved with, accepted with, and build from there, rather than just looking for competence only. That's rationally, again, that makes sense. But I think in terms of daily experiences, it's not the wisest choice to make, I believe, at least.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I think, you know, for a practitioner with a client to just look at a client's weekly schedule and just tell me like, what is your day look like? What does your week look like? Like that may be one of the most important things to do, because it gives you kind of most of the answers, right? I see this as so much more relevant than digging into someone's past. It's like, no, what are you doing on a day to day basis? It's so simple, but that's where, you know, all the leverage is, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Unless I'm wrong and I'm missing something, but it's like, that's where it is, right?
Well, I think, you know, the past can be interesting, of course, because it can help you to see through certain patterns and why you're doing things. So it can help to increase awareness, right? You can notice certain patterns that are not helpful in the present and analyze the past and maybe have an idea where they come from. So that awareness can help you to break that pattern in the present. But I agree. I think ultimately life is this day-to-day experience that is unfolding. And I think the best we can do is to make sure that we create a life that is worth living, you know. And I was just having a cup of coffee outside, and I was asking myself, like, is my life worth living? Do I consider my life worth living? And I think that is the question that matters the most. And if you answer this question when it comes to your own company, like, is this company worth investing in? Is it like worth spending time on a daily basis? If the answer is yes, I think you're at the right track. If you feel it's meaningful, it's, you know, then you should continue, I think. But if it's only for the money, I think it's a useless game. I think you will get disappointed very, very soon, because what I've noticed myself, even though we may have enjoyed some financial success, I think the real beauty for me from running the company doesn't come from the financial matters, but it comes from the feedback from people. You know, reading an email of somebody who tells you, like, it has profoundly changed the way I relate to myself, or it has helped me to deal with this and that. This is what, for me at least, gives me a true sense of satisfaction.
Yeah, exactly. Or if you look at the comments of our first podcast episode that we launched last Tuesday, that's where I draw a lot of energy from as well. And the finances, you know, it was after maybe our first, you know, successful product launch or whatever, it just stopped mattering. It was like,
yep.
Okay, yeah, now it's just a number, and it doesn't really matter anymore. It's like, still, even now, it's just numbers. It's just accounting is what it feels like, you know? And of course, and it makes has sense. To make sense. Yeah.
Because but, again, what do the numbers do? They don't add anything to your daily existence.
Yeah.
You know, that's, I think the whole point with money. Money will make some things easier. And of course, having too little money is likely to result in lower well-being. I think we all agree with that. But money will not change the smell of a rose or increase the love you feel for a friend. You know, it will not help you to be missed by others when you're no longer here. I think that's the whole point here. And I think when it comes to money, my relationship that I try to have with money is to make it a tool to facilitate the person I want to be, you know, to use money in a way that will help me to express the love and appreciation for life more easily. So you could say, I'm trying to use money at the service of my heart. I call this heart money. So it's different. It's a different kind of money. So it's then money shifts from being a goal to like a facilitator, I think, to realize something that matters. And, you remember that we, during a masterclass, we got financial advice from somebody, and he said, like, money is important. And he said, like, not for the sake of it, but for creating what you deeply feel is necessary at a larger scale. That's what he said. And then for me, it started to, you know, slowly started to dawn on me. I think it's about the function that it has. So
the facilitation, like, it's a facilitation tool. And we've also called it, not to get too woo-woo, you know, but we've called it energy. And I think it is energy in a sense. Yes. I know some people who got rich, like, over a really short period of time. You know, some of them were in cryptocurrencies or day trading, and, like, they became millionaires pretty much within the span of about 1 year. And it's so interesting to see the relationship that they have with their money, right? It's like, I've heard them make remarks like, oh, it doesn't feel like I've earned it. It feels like it's not mine. It's like, I wouldn't matter if it all disappeared again. Like, I've heard them say all these things. And I was like, wow, that's such a different relationship than I have with, you know, the money that we've made with our business, because it's all about the energy that's connected with the money, you know, about the story that's connected with this money. Like, have you worked hard for it? I mean,
it's, I fully hear you. So you see what I've learned, because I've been delivering like trainings to helping professionals for many years. And what I've noticed is that some of them, they were having a really problematic relationship with money, because on the one hand, they know they need it, but on the other hand, they feel almost like forced to be very, how shall I put this? Like, they feel that money is dirty or something, that you shouldn't ask too much for your services, because that would make your services not okay enough, or like,
you'd be cheating people. Or,
exactly. Yeah, because you're asking money. But I think for me, money is nothing more than a way of exchanging things. You know, what we often forget is that money is, I think, a very beautiful tool to also express, you know, that you value something. I think we all can relate to this. Sometimes somebody does something for you, right? He helps you tremendously, and you want to give him something back, right? You want to give him a present, or just
reciprocity.
Reciprocity, exactly. So when this person says, no, I don't want money, I don't want anything in return, what you're actually doing, you're preventing the other person from thanking you. Often this has to do with this idea that we have, that some of us have about money, that money is something, you know, that is associated with greed and that kind of stuff. But I think if you look at it from a more abstract perspective, and you see it more as a way of energy flow, of an exchange that is going on, I think you'll also see that it's okay. You know, there is nothing wrong with money in itself. Yeah. You see what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, to be honest, the people that have this relationship with money, that regard it as, you know, someone who's rich, oh, that's the result of greed, or that's the result of force, or of privilege, or of like dirty capitalism, or of Ayn Rand kind of objectivism. these are often people, at least in my experience, that are not creating a lot of value for other people. And, you know, this may just be my personal experience, but it's like almost again, like it's some kind of cognitive dissonance reduction for them, where it's like maybe they get money from the government or they work for the government or they perform some kind of job where they're not really creating a lot of unique value. And then you look at other people who are and who are getting more, you know, financial means out of that. And then, yeah, it's easy to start bashing them, but like, look at the value they create, because unless they're day traders or like Wall Street brokers, there's a good chance they're creating a lot of value in the world. And then I think it's no more than fair that they get rewarded for that. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. So money can also follow naturally from the thing you create. As I said, it's like on an energetic level. I think if you create something of value that people are really willing to pay for, an inevitable consequence is that people will pay. I think this is why it's so important to, I think, address this whole link between running a company and money. I think ultimately, when we decide to start on our own and run our own company, money is always an issue. It is always, at least it was for me, you know. Honestly, when you ask me like, man, I really would love you to go in, you know, to go all in and work full time for the company, that at that time, it meant that I had to quit my professorship. You know, I had to quit being a professor at university. I had a fixed position. I had to leave so much behind. And what did I get in return? Financial insecurity, because now I had a fixed salary. You know, I wasn't too bad. I was providing, you know, I had enough money for my family and so on. And suddenly you come with this idea of doing something you truly love, but you have to let go of the security that you have. And I think for many people, that is a situation where they're in, you know, at least many people that I coach, I've noticed that they know that their job is not their dream job. They want to do something differently. They want to do something different. They want to have a different job. But the first reason they always mention to me, at least, is, but, you know, I have to be realistic because I also have to pay the rent and so on and so on. So the money comes up very early as a reason to not follow their heart. And for me, I've been there as well. I've been so afraid to, you know, to not make enough money and that we would fail and that I gave up something that was so, you know, that many people dreamed of, you know, having this fixed position and all the security and ever, whatever you want, certainty and trade it for something that is not certain. And you know what helped me the most?
What's that?
My son. When my son was born, there were two things that I told him. I swear to God, like 5 minutes after he was born, I held him in my arms and I said, like, two things in life I hope that you will, you know, embrace. First of all, accept yourself unconditionally. Love yourself for who you are. And the second one is follow your heart, you know. Make choices based on your heart, not your rational mind, but follow your true heart. And when I was facing this difficult choice of leaving my fixed position and entering an unknown area, I was asking myself, if I stay here, you know, at university, what is the example that I'm setting here for my son? What am I doing? I can tell him that he should follow his heart, but I'm a hypocrite because I'm not doing it. I'm staying somewhere where my heart is not. So when I was, you know, having my exit interview and I was sharing the news that I was leaving, I mentioned this story and I said, I'm not being honest to myself and to my son if I stay here. I'm not setting an example. I'm not inspiring him to follow his heart. Wow. So I have to do this myself as well. And that was a really, for me, that was really helpful because that made me, actually it pushed me over the boundary.
It gave you the necessary courage to make that decision. That's beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. So this is also what I often do with clients who have kids. I ask them, like, for instance, I once had a client who was really, you know, beating himself up, very low on self-compassion. I said, would you like your kids to be this way? What would you tell your kids if he was in your position? And again, this person suddenly realized, I'm setting the wrong example here. If I want my kids to be forgiving and self-compassionate, I have to be so as well.
Powerful intervention.
Yeah, it is. It is. It for me, at least, it was a wake-up call. And ever since, I try to live, and I fail miserably, of course, because I'm making a lot of mistakes. But I try as good as possible to set an example in the way I live my life. And I swear to God, even if we would fail and we would go bankrupt tomorrow, I was so proud that we did it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people ask me, like, are there things you're proud of? And I'm not actually proud of anything in life except for this thing that I was talking about, that I had the courage to move beyond the fear, because the fear was tremendous, I can tell you.
I remember.
yeah, you remembered. Actually, it took quite some, you know, it could took quite some time to get over it. Yeah. I've got this really cool quote from a friend of mine. He said, like, you know what it is? When people want to jump off a cliff, like, metaphorically speaking, of course, to make that transition to do something you really love, they want to get wings before they make the jump, right? They want to be in control of everything. But here's the thing. You cannot be in control of everything because you don't know what it's like when you make the jump. That's the whole idea of, you know, making a choice that is different from what you always did, like leaving your comfort zone. You will never know what's out there. So you cannot create wings before you jump. You will get the wings as soon as you jump. And this is what I've noticed in my own life, but also in my work with clients who made that decision to follow their heart. As soon as you start, no matter how small, even if it's just one day a week, to follow your heart and create something you truly love in life, life will start to, I would say, conspire almost to create that pathway for you. You know, suddenly people, you know, you meet people that help you along the way, and this new pathway starts to emerge often, you know, automatically.
Yeah, I think it's you who starts to adapt to the new circumstances. I mean, yes, like, that's the survival of the fittest kind of idea. You know, we were talking about this yesterday as well. Like, the environment may not change, but you as a person, I mean, we're very, very malleable to a certain degree, at least as humans. And I think in business, it's the same, you know, the most able to adapt to circumstances and to changing dynamics are the ones that will survive. Yes. And there's another thing that you said that I really like. It's like, start small, you know. What if you can start with one day a week? Because people in their minds, often when I hear this, and I've worked a lot with, like, starting and struggling entrepreneurs, of course, it's what the people who I wrote my first book for in Dutch. And they always see it in a very dichotomous way. It's like all in or all out, right? It's like they have a full-time, daytime job, or they're going to go all in on, like, being an entrepreneur and starting this new venture. And it's like, okay, that's an interesting strategy. But why don't you just start with, like, 2 hours at night after your job? You know, maybe there's only 1 hour you can free up. Maybe you have kids. You have an even more busy life. Maybe you can, like, take a block of 4 hours on the weekend and, like, ask your partner to take care of the kids for a while, or whatever, you know, free up some time and start doing what it is that you really want to be doing. As something preferably that's solving a problem or that's valuable for other people, something that's not just about you. Try it, see how it goes. And maybe you can, like, slowly scale it up from there. Maybe at some point, you know, some money will start, you know, to flow out of those efforts. I mean, look at how it went for us. Maybe we can take it back to, you know, where we started and when our platform, our website became a business, because we had been building up this platform, positivepsychologyprogram.com, for 2 years before we ever made a dime. That's two years. Yep. And that wasn't full time. That was just, you know, because I still had a full time job. I was still employed as well here in Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. Working in online marketing. And when I came home, I would start to work on a website. And I knew, and intuitively I knew, like, it's all of these hours that I'm putting in right now, and I'm not seeing anything in return. But I was, you know, I was seeing something in return, actually, except it wasn't, like, monetary. It was, like, visitors on the website, people sending me emails, people asking me on social media, like, hey, can I contribute to this platform? that you're building, you know, guest authors, stuff like that. So we had been building it out for 2 years before it ever started to, in quotation marks, like do anything for us. And yep. I think that's what made the transition so natural, because there was already something there. We already had traction. We already had people who were, yep. you know, on our mailing list. And then it was, for me at least, because I started to go full time in 2017, start of the year. It was an easy transition to say, like, okay, I'm going to stop all of my other activities. I was running an agency, of course, at that point. I had already quit my job. I'm going to stop all that and just focus, go full time on positive psychology program, because there was already something there. So it wasn't like an all in, all out kind of situation. It was like supernatural transition. And that's an idea that I really want to share with people. It's like, maybe try to look at it that way. Maybe not all in, all out.
No, absolutely. And everything, I think, I think in general, many things that are big, we're not big in the beginning, you know, everything starts small. You know, there's this beautiful documentary I saw about, you know, popular musicians. And there is this very funny misconception that people say, wow, look at this new band. So suddenly there is a band that breaks through with a, you know, a hit song or whatever, with a great album. But the funny thing is that band is not new. In many cases, they've been making music for 15 years. So the same applies to running a business often. We see those big companies or we see successful people, but we only see them at their current, you know, in their current form, but we forget that they started small, that they struggled, that they faced a lot of difficulties, that they went through so many things, so many fears and, you know, struggles. But that is not what we tend to see. And I think that's the, for me, that was a big illusion, always. And I think when we started our own company, I noticed that the beauty of starting your own company is that you start building something and it becomes bigger and bigger every day. It's like playing with Lego, you know, it's like this huge building that tends to get bigger and bigger. And,
it compounds as well.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's like every year you profit from what you've built the year before, you know, and that's how it's different from like exchanging your hours for money, which a lot of freelancers are doing, of course. But I also know a lot of practitioners and coaches are doing. And over the last year, I've been talking with a lot of, either coaches or psychologists who tell me like, the kind of thing that you've built, like this platform that, allows you to, you know, stop exchanging your time for money, but that's just like you've invested your time in it and now it's kind of working for you. That's what I want as well. I've heard this so many times, man. And, yeah, so I think that's the limitation of, for instance, doing especially one-on-one coaching, because your impact, it's not just about money, but about the impact that you can make is very limited to the amount of hours that you have and that you can possibly put into it. Like as soon as you start doing workshops or like seminars, okay, the impact increases and you can also make more money, of course, naturally. But if you start building information products or you set it up in a scalable way, then it's almost infinite. But like the rate of return on that, it's like, it's exponentially different. It's like, it's incomparable. So what do you think about this? Because you've been like a one-on-one coach as well. You still do it sometimes. Like, what do you think about this as someone who has done one-on-one coaching and workshops?
Well, I think that for me, it's not so interesting. I think all that is I call this the form, you know, we have the world beyond form, and that is like your values, what keeps you going, your interest, that it's not, you know, the world of the concrete form, I would say, but what you're talking about is the specific form you're doing something. You can run an online business or you can coach people. I don't think it matters so much, how you ultimately do it. If you love coaching and you just want to spend 40 hours a week with a client, I think that's your, you know, ultimate form in which you can do your job. You know, if that's the way you feel happy, that you should do that. I think there is no fixed formula for that. So I'm never interested when I coach people as well in how they should do it. It never starts with how. It always starts with why and what, you know, what keeps you going? Why do you want this? And then you focus on the how. How can we implement this? And I think what we did here in our company, I think we found a way that matches our philosophy. I think what we did, we created something that allowed us to build and build something. Because if I would do it as I did before, like giving workshop training programs, like 8-week programs to people, I couldn't innovate anymore. I was repeating myself because basically you spend all the time, you know, delivering the same program. You cannot use that time to create something new. And one of my core strengths and the things that I love doing the most in life is creating. So for me, that was not the optimal form of delivering my heart. You know, my heart was manifested in a different way, more, you know, in a more efficient way, maybe, that's not for me the point, you know. So you should never start with asking yourself, how can I reach as many people as possible? Or how can I think that depends all on whatever you want to do. You know, maybe somebody just wants to,
I'll give you a concrete example. So there's someone that comes to mind. It's like they want to create, like a location independent business. They want to create more freedom for themselves so that they can spend more time with kids and they don't have to get like a nanny during the day, but they can spend time with kids themselves. Those are two, you know, reasons that, came to mind. It's like, okay, so
beautiful.
It's about freedom, right?
No, exactly. And here's my point. So if people come to me, if I were to coach these people, right?
Yeah.
I would ask them like, you've been talking about the form. It's about the way you want to create life, right? You're talking about, I want more freedom. I want more this. I want more financial resources, independence, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But that's the result of something different. That's the outcome. So, but that outcome can be manifested in many ways, but I'm not interested in that specific outcome. Because what happens if you start helping people to realize that form, that world of form we're talking about, then you say, okay, let's start to look at business models that can help you realize this. But then we get back to the very beginning of this talk. The point is, what will your day-to-day experience be?
Yeah.
Your day-to-day experience is that you still have to work because there has to be some kind of income. And maybe you've created the ultimate way of making money, with spending, you know, not so much time and scalability, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. But if it doesn't match your personal values and your unique way of expressing yourself, what you're doing is you're wasting your time again, because on a day-to-day basis, the work you're doing, the very thing you're doing in the moment, is not satisfying to you. So you see what I mean? And maybe that creates a certain kind of independence, but ultimately that's not, I think, what you should strive for. When people, I know many people that say, yes, I want to do what you do, or I want to create also this kind of independence and, but this is not how it works. I think this is a personal, theory that I have, and it's not scientifically proven. It's far from it, but I believe that you cannot create what you are not. I think you can only create what you are. If you're hateful, to give you an example.
Yeah.
And you have these very strong negative emotions. I think out of that state, you cannot produce anything that is even close to, you know, harmony or love or whatever. And this is why it is so important, I think, to start first by doing something you love, finding something that resonates with you, and move on from there. Just move from this starting point rather than where you want to go to, because that's basically is having, doing, being. Right? It's saying, if I have enough money, if I have the freedom, right? So let's start with the money again, is a recurring theme in this podcast. So if I have enough money, then I can finally do what I want, and I will be happy, right?
I know,
have, do, be, and I say do, be, do, have. Be happy. Hmm. Now find something that suits you. Do what you like doing. And then the money is probably the result or whatever you're looking for.
Right.
From that very beginning state. Because
very,
the beginning
very
state...
Very different order.
It's a very different order. It's a different... And this is what you see in research as well. If you take a look at people that are really successful at what they're doing, many of them, they just love what they do. They would pay somebody to do what they do. And to me, that is no coincidence. You know, it's because those people are, you know, not doing it for the outcome. They're doing it for the process. They invest so much time, so much effort. It's an ongoing process. They can keep going. Where somebody who's doing it for the money only, when failure kicks in, I think they will fall easily and not get back up again. But somebody who's doing it for the love in the first place, they will go on and go on and go on because, you know, they can't help but doing so. As if there was another choice.
It's really interesting because you approach it from a more like psychological perspective of the individual. And if I were to approach it from a business perspective, you know, then it's all about the problem you're solving or the problem that you're helping to solve for some people, right? And a good question to ask yourself. So it's more about the people that you're helping than about the problem, because the problem, maybe at some point the solution comes along and the problem just disappears, right? And if your business disappears as a result of that, that's bad, right? But if you're serving a certain, you know, let's say target market, and you can help them on an ongoing basis to solve the problems that they have, right? And new problems may come along. And you're just there for them to help them solve the problems, which is what we're doing as well with the masterclasses and with the toolkit, of course. Then you can, I don't want to say guarantee your continuity, but at least the chance is bigger that you're going to survive as a business. Because, I mean, look at how fast everything is changing, right? Do you just want to pick one static problem and hope for that to remain a problem so that you can stay around as a business? It's like, maybe a bad idea in a world where everything is changing so fast. So the question then becomes this: who do you love? Who do you want to serve? Mm. Because that's the most important thing. For us, we have chosen to serve people that you're also a part of. That's like helping professionals,
yes.
You know, practitioners, psychologists, coaches, therapists. Those are the people that we love, so to speak, right? And that we're helping with any kind of problems or challenges that come along. That's why we always keep the communication channels open. We're always trying to find out, like, okay, what kind of other things can we help you with? So I think that's a beautiful way to approach it as well for people who are thinking like, who start by thinking what they want. Okay, they want, you know, financial means, location, independence. They want all of these results, like you said, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
But maybe start with the people you're helping. That's a helpful paradigm shift.
Yes, I think it's twofold. I think it's what is the problem that I can contribute to in a positive way. And this may involve helping people or serving them in another way. But I think what is also important is to find your own unique way of doing that. I think you can say, I want to become a coach. Yes, of course. And there are so many coaches. But the question that you really have to ask yourself is, what makes me unique? What makes me different from all the other coaches? Why would somebody choose me over somebody else, you know? What is it that what I do or what I have or my philosophy, whatever it is that characterizes me, that makes me unique in my approach. And this is why I think it's so important to be authentic and be true to yourself and not copy people. Mm-hmm. Because if you copy them, you try to become something else and you lose your unique value. And in the world of business, it's all about value. The core word for me is always about value. Valuing yourself, valuing what you do, considering it important what you do, but also being valued by others. People have to really see the value of what you're doing.
If
this is not the case, and this is, I think, the classical example, if you love what you do, but nobody's waiting for this, you know, you will not make any money. And that's good, you know, maybe you should pursue it as a hobby, you know, whatever. But there is always, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but I believe it's a Japanese concept. Ikagai or ikagai, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but it says there are like four key ingredients, of successful work. It's connection to your strength, to what you do well, to what you consider to be important in life, your values. It has to do with, you know, the money you can make. Is it something that people are willing to pay for?
Mm-hmm.
And are you skilled enough? You know, you can love what you do. You can find it important. But if you're not skilled enough, you will not, you know, be of any service because you're simply not delivering any good result.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you combine those four, I think that's a very powerful framework to look at yourself. And I think if those four are in a balanced state, I think you can truly become a very successful entrepreneur.
That's also a cool exercise for people to do, to kind of like draw four circles on a piece of paper and see where they overlap, right? And see what kind of opportunities there are there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when it comes to coaching people, what I often do is to explore those domains and see what, you know, what is missing, or maybe I don't think that, you know, being self-employed is something that is perfect for everybody. I think for some people, it's just not the perfect solution.
I think
what you were talking about, there is this idea that once you're self-employed, there is this freedom and all that kind of stuff. But that's not the reason why you should do it. You see what I mean? It's all a means to an end.
Yeah. And, you know, I shared this quote with you, yesterday. It says, you can't be normal and expect abnormal results. Right.
Yep.
And I feel like that really applies to us and our business as well. I mean, in a lot of senses, we're like, not normal at all.
No.
Like very, very abnormal, maybe even. And I think for a normal person in that sense, I don't think entrepreneurs are necessarily normal people, right? I think they're abnormal compared to the rest. So maybe you have to be a little bit, you know, crazy in that sense to be able to bear the responsibility of running your own business and deal with the insecurity that's involved as well. I mean, ever since we started it, I can't remember. It's like always somewhere in the back of my mind. It's like our business, our website, right? Mm-hmm. Not saying like always, but like during waking life, it's mostly there, and most of my efforts are aimed towards that as well. Like you could almost call that pathological. Right. And maybe that's why the results are abnormal as well. Mm-hmm. But I think that's something that, you know, people who just want the end result can underestimate. It's like, yeah, but it goes at a sacrifice, and not just one sacrifice, not just a quitting your job, but like continued sacrifice.
Absolutely. And this is why it's so important to truly love what you do. If you're not passionate about something, truly passionate, I wouldn't be so sure to start your own company, you know, because what I've noticed, and I think many listeners will agree with me, if somebody is really passionate, if somebody is really into something, it's contagious.
Yeah.
And this cannot be faked. You cannot fake passion. You can pretend, but you will, you will fail eventually, because people will see through the illusion. You know, I think somebody that's truly passionate will create that pathway automatically through his or her passion. It's inevitable. It will create itself if it's genuine, I guess. But for me, all that kind of stuff, like I want to get like financially independent or more secure, that's all like, you know, obscuring in a way the pathway that is driven by passion. Passion itself is not concerned with freedom. Passion itself is concerned with creating
expression.
You know, expression, that's what passion is. Passion is expressing the self, the self truthfully, the authentic self truthfully. And you were referring to like maybe entrepreneurs are a bit crazy people or like stand out from the rest or different from the rest, whatever you want to call it. I think maybe they are more close, or many of them are more close to their unique, authentic, you know, being and their unique way of expressing it. And this is why they are different from other people, because I think when you look at the history, right? And let's consider like big artists, and I wouldn't consider myself an artist, of course, but just to draw a similarity here, many of them at the time, when they were creating, for instance, paintings or whatever, they weren't recognized as such. Yeah. Many of them, they were made fun of. And years after, people started to realize, my God, he was so ahead of his time, or he was doing something that was so different. But that's the very process we were talking about in the beginning, you know, when I was talking about, you know, I think we talked about this earlier. I was talking to you about mindfulness and my research. And in the beginning, when I was doing research at university on mindfulness, that was new as well. That was also like an entrepreneurship in university itself. I was the first one starting research on a topic like mindfulness, like over like whatever, like 13 years ago or something. Back then, people were making fun of it. Seriously, they were making fun of me. And they said, well, oh, now we have to all dress up in white and act like gurus and go to work. And so they were actually making fun of this research line. Of course, after the years progressed and many studies were done and we got cool results, then suddenly people start to adopt it and they start to collaborate. But in the beginning, there is always this kind of resistance, you know. So you have to be different. Exactly, pushback. But you have to be different from the rest. Otherwise, you will become like the rest. That's the inevitable consequence. If you want to be average, you have to act average. You have to follow the norm. You have to look at what other people are saying. You have to look at the media. You have to follow what everybody is doing to fit in the picture. So what helped me tremendously as well in leaving university and entering insecurity and you know all that kind of stuff is picturing myself in the future. I remember you told me like if you continue doing this, you know where you will end. And then I saw myself sitting in this little, you know, room, this ugly 80s building. You know, and I was picturing myself there like 20 years later.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, man, it's not going to happen. This is because if you continue doing what you're doing, you know where you will end. If you want to change your life, then you have to do things differently. That's an inevitable consequence of wanting things to be different. You have to make that choice, because otherwise, if you keep repeating yourself, you will end up with the very same results.
Yeah. And to me, that's the scariest thing in life. Like I literally get goosebumps as you said that, like to know where you're gonna end up and to not like what you're seeing at all in that vision. Yeah. That's like, that's the saddest thing to me. And that's also why I made like a drastic turn in my life back in 2015. Remember when I quit my job, I broke off my relationship with my ex. I sold my house. I started, you know, traveling and working in a digital nomad kind of fashion, you know, just like going to places close to the ocean in the sun, you know, working from there, because that's something I always wanted to do, but mostly because I didn't like what I saw when I imagined myself 5 years down that road, 10 years down that road. And the image I had of that was so clear. It's like, I know what that will be like. You know, I could just picture it, and I didn't like that at all. And to me, like, it's a super existential notion, of course, but that's so scary to be able to like predict your life and to not like what you're seeing. That's when you really know that something drastic needs to happen.
Yes, exactly. And if I think back of my kids, you know, I don't want them to have such a life. I want them to have a life in which they're, you know, brave enough to change their pathway if they feel they need to, and not, you know, stay connected to what they're doing just because that's what everybody is doing.
Exactly. I mean, look at it from a sailboat metaphor, you know, perspective, where it doesn't need to be a complete 180 that you make in your life, but just changing by a couple of degrees, you know, 1 year down the road, you're going to end up somewhere completely different by just changing a couple of degrees. So, like, yeah,
wow.
The question is like, maybe what kind of thing in your life do you know you have to, or like want to change, in which your future perspective of yourself will be so much better? Like, what are you not changing or like hesitant to change right now that will prevent you from ending up in that destination where you really want to end up? And maybe it's just that, yeah, no, like I said, like a couple of degrees that you have to change the course.
Yes, absolutely. And the thing, I think what prevents us most is fear. It always comes down to fear. fear that you may fail, fear that you will not make enough money, fear that you will be
disappoint people.
Exactly. It's always this fear. But I think the good news is that you can do it and have fear at the same time. So many people ask me, like, how did you manage to overcome the fear? And then sometimes I reply to them. I say, well, I still am afraid. I still have fear. Mm. Sometimes, no, seriously. Sometimes I'm you know, at home and I think, oh my God, I'm not sure how long we can keep this up and do this. And of course, because there is always insecurity. But I think the good news is I am afraid and I'm running a company. So it's not, I want to run a company, but I'm afraid. So I'm not doing it, but it's, I want to run a company and I am afraid. And that's for me is summarizes the journey. You know, it's fear will travel along with you side by side. And you have to accept that because it's part of the journey in my opinion.
Absolutely. I think that's a beautiful place to leave this discussion for now. I see we're over the 1 hour mark already. And I hope it really resonates with, you know, the person who's listening right now. And is there any final note you want to leave this on?
I seriously hope that people are being honest to themselves and live in line with their heart. You know, the very thing I told my son when he was born, those are the two things I learned through my own struggles in life and through the pain that I experienced, that it's so important to accept yourself unconditionally and to follow your heart. And I hope that people can do that as well. And whether or not you're starting a company, that doesn't matter, of course, in the end. But if you feel a very strong longing, you know, if you really have a strong desire to start your own company, I think you should start by the very beginning. Like, find something you truly love, follow your passion, and consider a way to serve other people or in whatever way. You know, that would be my final message that I sincerely hope that will resonate with people.
Yeah, I think so. Thanks again for a great conversation, man. And I would love to do this again sometime soon.
Okay, man. Thank you. Take care.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.